On this episode of Still Loading, we're going to jump up in the air. Hey guys, it's Josh, and welcome to the newest episode of Still Loading. On this week's episode, we are actually going to talk about a new game for once, still kind of in the Nintendo vein, but we are going to talk about Super Mario Odyssey. And for this week, I brought my friend Casey back to talk about the game.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for coming back. Now, Casey, the reason I even chose you for this episode is you are the largest and biggest Mario, well, not size-wise, but in terms of fan level.
I hope not.
You are the biggest fan that I know of Mario in general. You know more about it than most other people that I know, as well as I'm looking at your room right now, and it is filled with Mario things. Super Mario Bros. 3, Galaxy, Mario Party 3, the Mario's history up until, at least until Galaxy 2. So I guess to start off with this, to get everything going, I wanted to talk about, first things first, the gameplay. Now, actually, let's first, overall impressions without, like, just a really quick blurb, like, if you had to say good or bad, without going into details, would you say good or bad?
Phenomenal.
There we go. That's what I 100% agree.
Yeah.
No, I loved it. So let's jump right into it. I don't really have the box art in front of me like we usually go with, but Super Mario Odyssey I thought was an interesting idea for them to take. Like, instead of the, it kind of went back to, like, you know, Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Sunshine. It kind of got rid of the linear 3D platforming like Galaxy brought, which isn't bad, but Galaxy was much more linear, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess the first thing and the most important aspect of the gameplay is Cappy. I mean, what do you think about Cappy?
I mean, it's an interesting concept. You know, never in the history of Mario games that we've had his hat as a weapon, you know, as a projectile weapon. And I thought that was a really cool concept. It kind of made me think, okay, what can Nintendo do next with this game? You know, what kind of other boundaries can they break? And, you know, lo and behold, they never disappoint. So this, something as minor as using his hat as a weapon and as a live creature or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's really, really neat.
What I liked the most about it a little bit was that, it is a very simple equation if you think about it. Mario plus throwing Cappy plus, you know, victim, outcome, whatever you want to call them, equals this, equals whatever the outcome is. And literally all they do in the gameplay is change that one variable. Whoever the, you know, the target is, the victim, quote unquote, it changes the outcome drastically.
Exactly.
And they pick the same exact thing every time. It's the same exact equation throughout the entire game, but all they're doing is just swapping out variables.
Yep.
And that's what I think is so unique about the gameplay. It's the same design, but it changes so much, even though they're not changing the equation.
It
boggles my mind when you think about that. And I think that's what makes this game strong. Not just other games, but other games that generally get too complicated, I feel like that's where the downfall comes from. But with this, it's so straightforward, it's easy for anyone to pick up.
Definitely. It's definitely an all ages type of game, you know, old school right from the beginning. Mainly more so of the Mario 64 era, for those who grew up playing that, of course, up until the Galaxy era. It's kind of like a nice mix in between. And just to extend on what you were saying about the gameplay wise and how they incorporated it, it's kind of reminds me of using different elements from different games, you know, such as Kirby, for example. You know, how he would, you know, suck up the enemy.
I didn't even think
about
that.
Yeah, he would suck up the enemy and become the enemy, where Mario would throw Cappy onto whatever enemy and become that enemy's power. Like, I thought that was
I didn't even
really
think
neat.
About that. That you're right. It is a lot like Kirby. I honestly, since what I like doing this, like, people have different perspectives on things that I'm not going to always see. You're right. It's a lot like Kirby. You just take over now, but instead of, well, yeah, because but instead of sucking up the enemy to kill them, you just take over them. So you're still, like, kind of taking an enemy out of the equation of the level, if you want to think of it like that. But what I like is the variety of enemies that you can take over, and they each have different things. So if we go to the very first world, you know, Cappy's home world, I forget what it's called, but Cappy's home world, the very first thing, and they don't tell you it exactly, like, if you do it with it because you know it, because you, it's by accident, it's there. If you take too long, then they'll tell you, but the frogs, it's the very first thing, and you throw it on there, and the, even the first enemy you take over, it's a very simple mechanic. It's Mario that jumps higher. That's it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can run on water and stuff like that, but, and if you notice, when the first time that you throw the cap on the frog, and it goes through that whole little cutscene of Mario, like, going through some, I don't know, like, David Finch type of, David Finch, David Fincher, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, some kind of, like, trippy, movie type of thing. He's like freaking out because he's getting sucked into the brain of this frog.
Yeah,
it's kind of fucked up. It's a little trippy looking. Like they just see and like he looks at his little frog feet. I forget the actual word for them right now. Can you think? I don't know. Whatever.
I know.
but if you watch that cutscene or that little cinematic as it's going, you can see secrets behind where you came from that you couldn't have reached before.
Right.
Because you come out the door. And you see the water and, like, the little ice things floating in the water. And if you stand on them too long, they sink down. Mm-hmm. And then you see the frogs. And as you throw the hat on them, the cutscene, the camera pans to behind where you just were. And you see a bunch of stuff up above, like, the door frame that you couldn't reach before. So now you can either continue on with the level, or you can take the frog and jump back over there.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the amount of options that this game gives you, and I know the replay value is incredibly high. There's just so much to do. And when I first played it, and it's like what you said at the beginning of this podcast, how it kind of steers away from the whole linear aspect of it, which there was nothing wrong with the previous games, and you're right. It just, for me, I was so used to that when I went to go play this game, I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't have just regular levels. You get the moon, and then after you get the moon, you go back to the main lobby or Cappy's world or whatever, and then you go to the next level and do the same, where it's just when you just run around and get all the moons that you can. But looking back now, I'm actually kind of happy that they did change it. It's a fresh perspective on it, and it just, you can do so much in each kingdom, and it's great.
What I really like is that, like you said, it's much more open. You don't just get a star or a power, well, in this game, a power moon, and then you go back to the beginning. But what's cool about it is that since there are so many, I believe there's like over 9,000 of them in the game or something like that. There's so many power moons. It would be killer. Killer not in a good way, but like it would kill the flow and momentum of the game if they did what Super Mario 64 did. Absolutely. Where every time you get a power moon, you get sucked back out, and then you have to jump back in, and the whole world is reset.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
And I like the fact that it's almost like they took an open-world game and Nintendo-ized it. Like, they literally just took... each level is its own little world, and they're pretty big levels, some of it. Especially after you get out of Cappy's world, and you go to the desert world. I forget the name of the desert world right now, but... the very like Day of the Dead type of feeling vibe to it. That level's huge. Mm-hmm. There's so much to do in that level, and there's only about like, what would you say, like 15 or so levels, 15, 20 levels in the game, like worlds, if you want to think of it like that.
Yeah, I know that there were. I have to go back and look, because I played through the game, and then I went back and got some of the power moons, but I didn't go back to replay it, and I want to, because, you know, after you complete the game, apology for the spoiler, but you unlock the Mushroom Kingdom.
Well, no, there's going to be spoilers throughout this, so true. If you haven't beaten this game, spoilers. I mean, I guess it's a little late, but who cares? you should play it by now. If you haven't, go play it now. Mm-hmm. Pause the podcast, go play it. Spend the 10, 15 hours to beat it. Come on back and just continue on with this.
Absolutely. But yeah, it's one of those things where it has a really high replay value. Especially this one, because you know, like we were talking about, it's just so big and you have close to 1,000 moons to get, and there's just so much you can do.
What I liked about in thinking of the moons, the one thing that, and this isn't a criticism of Mario games, I would say this is more of a criticism in general of the game industry today, or games today, even in the past decade or so, there's not a lot of wonder in them. Like, this game kind of brought me back. It reminded me of how I felt as a kid. Because if you think about it, like, the first time you play the original Super Mario Bros., right? You're running through the level, and you figure out, in, you know, World 1-2, you're able to get up on top of the level. And for some reason, Mario's in front of all the score stuff. And you're going, like, what the hell? This is crazy. What's going on? And you continue running, and then you think, like, all right, well, if I'm up top here, can I just run past the exit pipe? And you run past the exit pipe, you're like, where's he going? What's happening? Yeah. And all of a sudden, you see three other pipes just appear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and it blows your mind, and you're like, holy shit, this is, where does it take me? Yeah. I don't know what's happening here. And you find out it's a warp zone, and you can go to one of three different worlds. I believe what it's something like world 2, 4, 3, and 4 mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yep.
And that's an awesome secret. Like, that's a great secret, and it makes you feel excited and just kind of curious. You're constantly curious. And even if you go to the first level, you have that hidden block that gives you the one up if you don't go down the pipe. Not a lot of games do that anymore. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. You know, game design has changed, and that's mm-hmm. great. It's become much more refined and much more consistent, for better and for worse. But you kind of lose that excitement and, like, childlike wonder is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And Odyssey captured that really well for me, because you would play through a level and you would just random. And I think that's why they kind of made some of the moons easy. You could just go see a guy on a bench and sit down and talk to him and be like, oh, no one talked to me. Here's a power moon. And you go, what?
Yeah.
And it's almost like they kind of throw out, like, some of the power moons are fucking impossible to get. But then some of them are just in unexpected places.
Yeah.
And that's where they kind of do it. They know they can't really trick you the way they used to, but they know they can try to, like, shift your focus somewhere else.
And Nintendo's comical in that sense, because, you know, just what you were talking about, you know, just getting a power moon just by talking to someone, it's like, oh, that was easy, that's funny, you know. Even going back to the original Super Mario Brothers 2, or the Lost Levels here, when you would try to warp, you would go back a level instead of going forward. That's like the biggest middle finger to a game that's one of the hardest.
Well, Mario, Lost Levels were just a big middle finger to everyone. Yeah,
absolutely.
I honestly credit the Lost Levels to the beginning of, like, the Kaizo Mario craze. Mm. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
For those who don't know, Kaizo Mario is basically homebrew Mario games where they make the levels obscenely difficult. And you generally have to apply tactics that you don't normally think about applying. A lot of them, my personal favorite ones are like Super Mario Bros. 3 and Super Mario World ones, because mm-hmm. the Mario World ones generally has a lot of Yoshi sacrifices, which mm-hmm. In a weird way amuses me, only because people's reactions to it.
No.
No, I loved you!
But the great thing about Odyssey 2 is that it pays definitely homages to the previous Mario games, like
oh my goodness, I mean, all the 2D segments.
Absolutely. Oh, that was so great. I thought that was a really neat feature. And then when you're going through New Donk City and it's playing Jump Up in the Air, like, mm-hmm. I was getting goosebumps. I'm like, this is my childhood right now.
And the funny thing is, objectively speaking, that song's not very good. It's super cheesy. You know what it reminds me of? Bad Sonic music from, like, the early 2000s. You know
definitely.
What I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But in a weird way, that made me so happy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if I just heard that on the radio or something, I'd be like, this is so stupid. But the way how Mario was incorporated in it and the imagery and
within the context of
exactly,
the game.
Exactly, it really, really paints a great picture. I also like, at the end of the game, when he's wearing the tuxedo, it reminded me of Super Mario All-Stars box.
Now, I guess to kind of, we're not quite done with the gameplay just yet, but just to kind of, like, keep to kind of summarize what we have talked about so far, you know, we talked about how Cappy works and it's very fun. One thing, and we talked about him just taking over enemies. One thing that we haven't talked about yet is how Cappy affects Mario's movement. And I think it's really cool. So think about Super Mario 64, right?
Yeah.
You have the triple jump, you know, if you time your jumps right, then you can get progressively higher, that kind of thing. And that's awesome. Then you can also pick up speed. You can do, like, the long jump where if you know you... I think... How do you do in Super Mario 64? It's like you hold Z and then hit jump real quick, and then he launches forward. Or if you're jumping... If you're falling and hit the Z button and jump, then he, like, shoots off midair. You know what I'm talking about? Well, what you can do in Odyssey is you can throw your cap and then run into it, and he'll bounce up into the air. And what you can even do, which I didn't know... The game actually does tell you this, but I saw it from a speedrunner. People are already speedrunning this game, which is insane. I'm going to show you videos.
Yeah, I want to see it.
It's fucking nuts. I really want to see it. Some of the movement tech they do, it's crazy. But no, so you jump up in the air and you throw your hat and you can press and hold Y so that way the hat will stay hovering in midair. Then as you're falling, you do that like launch forward. You know, I forget exactly. It's like Z, L, and Y or something like that. And he'll launch forward even though he's not touching the ground. And you'll launch into the cap that's floating and bounce you again. So you can like jump up a little bit, throw the cap, drop, and like, or jump up the, sorry, excuse me, jump up, throw the cap, let it hover, drop a little bit so that way you can like launch Mario, and then he'll bounce off the cap so you get distance and height at the same time. It's a really interesting game mechanic. And what I've seen some people do is they'll do that and then like jump into a wall that way and then go back the other way. As long as you touch something after, because I wasn't sure if you can like chain it, you know, like jump, throw the hat, dart forward, bounce it, then throw the hat again, dart forward and bounce a second time. It doesn't let you do that. If you can throw it again, and when you dart forward, he'll just kind of go right through the hat. Completely miss it. It's kind of aggravating. But if you touch something in between all that, you can technically just keep this chain going over and over and over again. And there's a lot of different parts of the game that really relies on the movement tech that... like your mastery of the movement tech. So there's some power stars that are very hidden that you have to rely, you have to master the movement tech in order to reach.
Yep.
And I think the idea of having Cappy be part of that is a really cool idea.
It really, you really have to play around with it in order to, you know, get the right angle, get the right jump, which is great because it's not so cut and dry, you know, as some other Mario games in the past made it out to be. But, yeah, there are just other ways to, you know, utilize movements and strategies to get whatever power moon that you can. You know, I remember in the, when I would be underwater a lot and I didn't feel, I was just too lazy to go through, get the air bubbles. I would just throw Cappy under a cheap sheet and just become that and just swim around. Didn't need to do anything.
I love that. Yeah. That was one of my favorite things. And I guess what's cool is that they even took that same, like we talked about before, it takes a very simple equation, Mario plus throwing Cappy plus target equals some outcome. They actually add an extra variable of where that equation is getting put in, because if it's just on land, it's only so many, but like if you have it underwater, it adds a whole new level of how things work. So you can have control of different fish and that kind of thing. So I guess the equation doesn't really change, but it is interesting the different places you can go. Like, for example, the squids. You know that squid level?
Yeah.
Where you take over the little squid guy, you can either propel yourself up or launch yourself over.
That was so
cool. There's a boss fight using him, too. I thought that was a really cool concept. Overall, I just thought the game was... What was cool about their equation is that since all you had to do was just swap out that target variable, it could allow lots of unique ideas for, like, almost like... It's almost like they had ideas for individual Mario levels, but it wasn't enough to make a full level out of it. So they just turned it into an enemy and then used that as like the basis for it. I don't know how to describe it, but I was really impressed with everything involving the different enemies you could take over. And plus now the movement tech that Cappy gave you. Is there any, I mean, I don't have much else to talk about with the gameplay. Is there any, like, final things you want to talk about the gameplay before we move on to the art direction and just art style?
No, I mean, I thought it was really well done. I mean, what I was about to say, I don't know if that has to do with the gameplay or the art style, but maybe what I'm about to say could segue into either. It could be either one.
Sure,
I'm open. I forget the name of it, but when you're in the kingdom before... Yeah. When you're in the kingdom before going to Bowser's castles, you fight the dragon...
Yes,
I thought that was really, really unique. That was just so out of left field, but I thought it was cool.
I hate that fight, too.
I do, too. Took me a while.
Do you know in the Mushroom Kingdom, like, you can play a lot of those bosses over again?
Oh, can you?
Yeah, if you go to the Mushroom Kingdom, after you beat the game, there's, like, different towers, and in each of those towers, there is a... in each of those towers, it takes you to one of the bosses you fought beforehand, and generally a tougher version of that boss.
Okay.
So you'll fight the lady who had the chain chomp, and you have to, like, take over the chain chomp and have it smack into her face. That was another cool idea.
I like that.
The fact that in the middle of boss fights, you would take over the boss's allies to use them against them.
Yep.
I thought that was a great idea.
Move forward and like a slingshot hit them. Yep.
But no. So you fight that dragon again, and he's 10 times harder. I could not beat him. I couldn't beat him in the second round through.
I never tried it, and I kind of want to just to see how tough it is. I'm definitely taking your word for it, but it's one of those things where it's like I got to see it myself.
Well, did you get to the dark side of the moon at all?
I don't think I have.
So, this isn't any story spoilers, but I guess spoilers for other people if they don't want to know this. If you get enough power moons, there's other levels past the Mushroom Kingdom that you don't know about. Oh. There is the dark side of the moon, which essentially, remember the Brutals, the rabbit bosses that you had to fight?
Yep.
Basically, you go to the dark side of the moon, and it's just called, like, Rabbit Tower. It's just a big floating carrot in the middle of space. And you literally marathon those four bosses plus their final version. There's only the only time you get health back is after you beat the fourth boss before the fifth and like final version where they're all together in that big mech suit, which arguably is the easiest version of that entire fight. Especially when you get up there, you get to take over one of like the Hammer Bros. You get to take over a Hammer Bros.
Oh, really?
And since they jump higher, it's easier to dodge everything, and they throw hammers absurdly fast, which does more damage than you can do stomping.
Yep.
So literally. It, I don't know how to describe it. It was just so easy. It was one of the easiest things, because when you fight that mech thing, you have to break the legs of the mech. And it was a lot harder in the original one, because you didn't really have the Hammer Bros. But in this one, you can take over a Hammer Bro, and literally just stand in front of him as he's like standing still and just spam the attack button, and he goes down in like a second.
Oh, cool.
Then you have to jump up the mech suit, and then they each have one of their little pods that you have to hit with the hammers. And you just... do the same thing, rinse, wash, and repeat 4 times in a row, and there's not much challenge to it. But where the challenge comes prior to that is you have to fight all 4 of them, a harder version of them, in a row with no health in between that. So you have to do it all on 3 hits. Or if you have the health bonus, you can get that. But I didn't have the health bonus, and I didn't feel like I was too lazy to go back to another world to get it. So I just went, I just kept pushing it, and I ended up beating them, surprisingly enough.
Nice. Yeah, like I said, I just beat the main game, and I played a little bit of the previous levels just to get some more power moons, but honestly, I really don't have that many. I think I have like a little over 200, but I'm going to go back and...
Once you get 500, then you go to the darker side of the moon. So there's the dark side of the moon, and then the darker side of the moon. And that is the biggest load of bullshit in the world. It's really cool, and after we're done recording this, or this is a day of recording, so we got another episode after this, but it's the biggest load of bullshit, because once you get to that darker side of the moon, there's actually a really cool thing where they play that jump up in the air song, and like everyone's there, like everyone from the game is in this darker side of the moon level, just like cheering you on and that kind of thing. It's really cool. It was a really nice button at the end of the game to like kind of close it out. But then you go into like the final level, and there are no save points, and it's some of the hardest platforming in the game.
Man.
So there's no checkpoints at all, and it's, I don't know how to describe it. It's insane. I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
But it is very long, and from what I've heard, it's essentially done for bragging rights. There's nothing really cool at the end of it. You don't get a new ability or power. You get a new costume, I believe, and that's it. And you go, yay, I guess. But no, overall, I really enjoyed every aspect of the gameplay of this. The only time I ever actually had issues is when the Joy-Con itself was crapping out, because apparently the right Joy-Con, until like early models of the Switch, the right Joy-Con is a little weird. Like, it has some connectivity issues, but apparently mine was all right. But no, overall, I thought the gameplay, I loved playing this game. There's very few games now that, like I said before, bring me that childlike sense of wonder, but also bring me back to it after I beat the game, because I want to find more of the secrets and I want to find more of those power moons or collectibles or anything like that.
And I loved playing on the moon, especially the zero gravity when you're floating around. Mm-hmm. That was so much fun. It reminded me of playing when I was a kid, Six Golden Coins.
Okay, for Game Boy. Super Mario Land 2, yeah. Right?
Yep.
But yeah, all right, so let's move on to the art direction. And so the art direction. Let's do art direction. Sorry, I was thinking we could do story, but we'll save story. We probably should have led with that. You know what? We're going to switch gears anyway. Even though I said art direction before the break, we're going to do art direction after another break. We're doing story right now, damn it.
Cool.
Because I'm nothing but organized. All right, so the story of the game, and I guess we'll do story and art direction during this portion of it before the next break, because the reality of it is the storyline isn't that impressive. It's a Mario game.
Yeah, it's no different than any other.
So the storyline is just your Mario not even saving Princess Peach this time. I mean, yes and no, but you're saving, since you have Cappy, you know, Mario's new friend. He has a girlfriend, wife, person?
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
And Bowser's trying to marry Princess Peach, and he is going around he's going around the world to basically get different things for his wedding. So he gets, you know, like a ring. He gets, I think like a soup, like a wedding soup or something like that. Mm-hmm. He steals like a cake from somewhere, I'm pretty sure. He steals a bunch of different parts from it. And all the meanwhile, just holding Princess Peach and this female version of Cappy.
He's stealing them from the kingdoms that you're chasing him after the playthrough.
Yeah. Exactly, because you're trying to get Peach back, and as you're trying to get her back, he's stealing more things from the wedding as you're trying to get her back. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of like that. I like that it wasn't just like, all right, let me just kidnap her for the sake of being a dick to you, Mario. It was like, no, yeah. I want to marry her. And a weird thing, at the end of the game, they both are fighting, and Peach is just like, enough of this. You guys are both stupid.
Yeah, and they're both like crying.
Yeah, and then she just walks away from both of them, and they're both crying. They hug each other or something like that. I thought that was kind of funny.
It was.
Maybe that's Nintendo's stab at not being quite as sexist. Who knows? Peach didn't need rescuing, but she did at the same... I don't know, it was a really weird mixed message on that one. It's like, I needed rescuing, but I'm going to make you feel bad, and you're not going to get any Mario.
Yep.
So, like, I'm not saying he deserved any, just for clarification. But it's just a weird type of thing. It's like, I need saving, but at the same time, I don't need saving. So it's like, I just wanted you to save me because I wanted you to. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
It is.
But, no. So, I mean, that's pretty much the story. You rescue Peach, and you stop the wedding. I mean, it's not really that special. I guess I kind of blew that up a little more than anything.
I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, when I say that you've played one Mario game, you've played them all, I mean in the sense that you more or less have to, you know, save the damsel of distress.
Every single time.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you're going to have your exceptions, you know, like Super Mario 3D World, where all of them...
That was an awesome game. Yeah. I loved that game.
That was fun.
And then, like, there's other ones. Like, isn't Super Mario Bros. The American 2? Super Mario Bros. 2 American version, exactly. Or Doki Doki Panic, quote-unquote.
Yep.
That one didn't really involve, because you could play as Princess Peach in that one as well.
She's my favorite one.
Because you could float, right?
Yeah.
I like how that, even though that was, you know, for those who don't know, I mean, I'm going to be doing a Super Mario Bros. 2 episode eventually. So we'll go into it more with that, but That wasn't the Super Mario Bros. 2 we got in the U.S. wasn't actually a Super Mario game originally. It was another game called Doki Doki Panic that they just kind of swapped the sprites out, and that's about it. But we'll go into all that later. But it's, I just find that interesting that that's where Peach's characteristics for the rest of for all of her playable games comes from.
Yep.
The fact that she's not necessarily the fastest or can jump that high, but she can float, so you can control her movement a lot more precisely than you can with any others.
And even in Smash, they put that ability in there too.
Smash, and then even Super Mario 3D World and Land, I guess, for that matter.
Yep. I'm actually in the, I feel like I'm in the minority with this, but I actually like Mario Brothers 2 better than 1.
I think there's a big contingent for that. If you think about it, like it added a bunch of new characters. Like Shy Guys weren't a thing until Super Mario Bros. 2. But anyway, we're digressing.
Yeah, we
that I'll honestly, in all honesty, spoiler alert for upcoming episodes, I'm probably going to have you back on for Mario 2
I'm
and
in.
3 because it's going to be there. But
look forward to it.
So the art direction of the game. First off, let me just say, I think this game is absolutely gorgeous. What do you think?
They
you
always
agree?
Outdo themselves. Nintendo always outdoes themselves, and it's just kind of like, all right, there's no way they can get any better from the last game. There's no way. And then they always do it.
Well, I think the reality of it is that, one, they have better hardware this time. The last time they made a Mario game for the Wii U, there wasn't really a true Mario game for the Wii U. You had the Super Mario like 3D World and stuff like that, and that's a Mario game to an extent. And then Super Mario Brothers.
I should have clarified. I should have meant like for the story and the gameplay, but in terms of art, it's actually great. The fact that you know you can transfer from 3D to 2D and.
Pretty seamlessly too. There's not like a big transition.
The color, the brightness.
It's just a happy game.
It
makes you happy when you play it. What I really like, and this is a really weird compliment for the game, I like its water graphics. Mm-hmm. And ever since Super Mario Sunshine, the water graphics for 3D Mario games have been awesome. I love the way the water looks in Super Mario Sunshine. It's bizarrely good looking compared to the rest of the game, which the game itself is fine. And it's a very polarizing game. Some people love it. Some people hate it. And there's like really weird segments where it doesn't feel 100% finished, but the water looks gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Every time.
And what we were talking about, when I was talking about the dragon, can't think of it at the top of my name, but the kingdom where you have to fight the dragon. And
I think it's like the Lost Kingdom or the Last Kingdom or something like that.
I think it is. And, I mean, I'm not talking about Mario himself, but the dragon and the texture and the rain and just the detail in it, dare I say, it looked a lot like PS4 graphics.
The Switch has the ability, I would say, to copy, like, at least low-end PS4 graphics.
I just meant,
graphics.
In terms of a Mario game. You don't really see that often.
It's a really pretty level. I still hate that fight, but it's a pretty level. I like that. And here's the thing. In any video game, art direction is extremely important because ultimately that decides how well a game is going to age. That and controls.
Mm-hmm.
Gameplay, you can get away with dated gameplay to a degree because people will go into it expecting that. But what people can't abide by usually are either poor graphics or poor controls. So, for example, GoldenEye is a fantastic game, but do you really want to go back and play that? Like, the N60, I loved it as a kid, but when you get used to modern shooters and you try to go back to GoldenEye, it's hard because you forget you can't control where you're aiming. You can control where you're turning, but everything is auto-aimed unless you hold a button, but then Bond stops moving dead in his tracks and the reticule goes around. Mm-hmm. So it's the controls, I mean, they work for what they were, and it's an important game nonetheless, but it doesn't hold up as well because, let's face it, the graphics aren't that great. I mean, I love GoldenEye. But and this is no criticism of the game itself. It's a super important game, but it's hard to hold up to this test of time. But go back on that same merit, go back to Super Mario 64. And while the controls, I would argue, are still not as good as what they are now, but the graphics still look decent. I mean, it's still not the best, but they still look pleasing to the eye. Mm-hmm. And the controls still function. Like, I don't get as frustrated with the controls in Mario 64 as I do in GoldenEye.
Definitely. And that's the thing about Nintendo that makes them so unique and so ahead of the game, is that they always put out these games, whether it's Super Mario, Legend of Zelda, that just all, I shouldn't say all, but a lot of them are 10 out of 10, and they get better with age. You know, mm-hmm. one of my favorite games of all time is Super Mario World for Super Nintendo.
I love that,
that game.
That
game came out 26 years ago, 91.
Yeah, 26 years ago.
I was one when that came out. And to this day, words to describe
it. And the thing that they do, and this does tie back to Odyssey, what Nintendo does first in every Mario game, no matter what it is, no matter what type of gameplay ideas they have for it, no matter what type of elements they want to include, once they determine what the game is going to be, before they create any of the puzzles, they work on Mario's movement. Mm-hmm. They get his movement down to as perfect as they possibly can get it for that console. Because if you don't like how a character controls, you're not going to enjoy the rest
Absolutely.
Of the game.
Absolutely, that is key.
And I know I said before, like, what ultimately decides how well a game ages is controls and graphics. Graphics, yes, but graphics, when you're trying to, your developers are only going to make games for the here and now, understandably. You're not going to make a game for an audience 5 years from now, because you're not going to make any money on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a weird gamble to try, who knows, but with gameplay, the most important thing, other than good graphics now, like, I'm not saying good art direction, there's a difference, good graphics versus good art direction. Medal of Honor Frontline has amazing graphics, but they don't really hold up because it's not good art direction.
Right.
Versus when you look at games like Sly Cooper. Amazing graphics of the time. And the reason why they still hold up now is because the art direction was very solid on it. They picked something that wouldn't just be outdated.
Yep.
It's the same reason why, like, Super Mario Sunshine still looks decent, because the art direction was good.
Mm-hmm.
I totally lost where I was going with that. But no, with Mario Odyssey, it has good. Oh yeah, sorry, I remember now. Where I was talking about, like, good graphics and art direction. That will only be known after time, because everything looks good, relatively speaking. There are exceptions, of course, but in general, most games look good upon release. What really matters is the controls upon release, and Nintendo focuses so much on that prior to, like, even the rest of the game being developed, that's why I think it handles so well. In general, why Mario games stand up to the test of time so well.
Absolutely.
All right. So, let us then, do you have anything else to say about the graphics or art direction? I mean, we can say they're beautiful and stuff like that. I would say, oh, skyboxes are really nice. Mm-hmm. I also really like the vistas. Like, when you are on any level, you can, especially like New Donk City or something like that, you can look out and you can see so much more. I mean, you can't play over there, but it looks visually amazing.
Oh, it does.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I know I sound like a broken record, but it really is gorgeous. It's one of those things where you really have to see it for yourself. I mean, every Mario game that comes out, they really focus on how to make it aesthetically pleasing, and it's pretty great. I don't know what else to say. It's awesome.
It's all good. So we'll move on to some of the final things that we're going to talk about. The next and pretty much final thing I wanted to talk about was the music, which will be a short discussion, but on to the music. All right, so the music of the game, as usual, is good. And I would argue that what I like most about Mario music is its ability to adapt to the times, as well as adapt to make something new each time around that still feels like Mario, but at the same time is nothing like the original. And I've noticed they do a lot of it with kind of like a jazz kind of feel, especially even with the new Jump Up in the Air. It's kind of like a pop jazz song almost.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, New Donk City has my favorite soundtrack in the game, just because it's very jazzy. It makes me feel very relaxed, running around in the sun, collecting power moons, meeting people in the city. It's neat.
It's a cool level. And speaking of that level, that also has that cool little side mission where you have to collect a band, and they play the Mario theme in the theater.
Yep.
And I like how you don't really know where they're going with it at first, because the first thing you almost always get, I mean, you can get them in any order, but if you get the drummer first, he's just, you know, playing a drum beat, you know, or something. And you're just wondering, like, all right, that's a nice beat. My favorite part is that when you bring him in, there's just a bunch of random people just like fist bumping.
Yep.
In the middle, they're like, I don't know what's happening, but this is a great drum beat. And so you go get more musicians. You end up getting a trumpet player, a guitarist, and a bassist, I believe. Mm-hmm. And as you bring them in, because it lets you hear the progression as it adds in the new musician each time, it's really interesting to hear, because you can kind of hear the song build up. And I remember I was just going in there. I stood in there for like 10 minutes just going like, this is a great arrangement of the Mario theme song.
I think they did that. I know I'm digressing, but I think, if I remember correctly, they may have done that in Luigi's Mansion too. But I forget. Yeah. And I meant also, not like
Dark
Moon. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, when you're in the music room and you're hitting on all the instruments and it does the beat and then it all comes together. So it kind of reminded me of that.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah. I actually recently picked up Luigi's Mansion. I played it, but I never beat it. So, and it's kind of a sad thing about me, I guess, is I never beat a Mario game up until I was like 26.
Really?
I'm dead serious, man. Wow. I actually want you to come over sometime so we can go through some of the Mario games I can't beat. So not to like have you do all of it,
right,
but literally just to pass the controller back and forth. I would love that,
yeah.
Because I've beaten Super Mario World, and now I've beaten Galaxy 1, and I've beaten 3D World, and I've beaten now Odyssey. So I've been in a good chunk now, but the first one I beat was Super Mario World when I was like two years ago, and then since then I've beaten a ton.
Right.
But it took me up until my 26th year of life to finally
never too late, beat man. A Mario never game. Too late. It's great.
But no, the music's awesome. Each level has a cool theme. It fits the theme each time. Mm-hmm. It fits the mood of the level each time. I like Mario's, like I said before, the Mario music's ability to adapt to each generation as well as kind of refining itself. It's all around good, solid music. Do you have any final things to say for it about the music before we move on to, I guess, our overall impressions and final thoughts on the game?
No, I know you and I both really enjoy the music, and if you are...
And the guilty pleasure of Jump Up in the Air, absolutely, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I might put that on my iPod. And yes, I still have an iPod, I still
listen to it. No judgment. It works. It's not online, so, you know, the freaking net neutrality is not going to hit it.
That's true. Good point. See what happens with that. But I just realized, too, I know I'm segueing, but this was totally unintentional. I filled my water on. I have a...
He has Mario on his glass. We each have... I have Peanuts Christmas. It is Christmas time, which is nice. December. We're recording this on December 2nd. I don't know why I gave that specific date, because you guys are going to hear this a couple weeks later. But
yeah, I know we segued, but my point is that, like, if you played Mario games and you are a fan of their sound, you will not be disappointed. I know when it comes to music, it's subjective. You know, some people might like the older Mario game music's mainly for nostalgia factor, but it's great. Check it out for yourself. Let me know what you think.
But, all right, so I guess to wrap all of this up, we've been talking for, you know, like a good chunk of time now, so to wrap all of this up, overall opinions of the game is that, I mean, I guess we're beating a dead horse at this point because, well, I guess not a dead horse. We're preaching to the choir, I guess, is a better analogy for this, because most, you know, video game news sources agree it's a masterpiece. It's a very, very, very good game. I wouldn't quite put it up there as masterpiece for me, but it's pretty damn high. Like, I really enjoyed a lot of aspects of this game, and I still go back, even though I have other games to play right now. I'm trying to force myself to play Breath of the Wild. Controversial opinion, not a big fan of it, but that's for another episode. But I keep going back to this because I like this game so much.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too, where I'm going to go back and try to collect as many moons as I can. I don't know if I would ever do the 999, but who knows? Maybe I will. Maybe.
Weird thing on a side note with that, you can buy moons. Like, it's 100 coins per, but you can just buy all the moons you want to hit what you need if you're not good.
I did do that, but I don't know how to explain this, and maybe you will have more of an idea where I'm coming from with this, but I feel like you can buy the moons, but you can't unlock certain things when you buy them after a certain amount of time. How does that work?
So, like, you can buy the moons to get where you need to go, but if there's like, if you want any things for like the costumes, there's certain, you have to get, you have to obtain a certain number of moons to unlock additional costumes.
That's right. Yeah.
So I mean, I haven't checked that out personally, so maybe I'll try that out a little bit to see if I test it. I mean, I don't have a lot of coins anymore because I keep buying costumes, and I want that damn skeleton costume, but it's like almost 10,000 coins, and I'm too lazy to just save up for it.
What costume is basically your go-to?
Actually, the Super Mario 64 costume. I love having the like old school costume there. Have you seen that?
I haven't.
Oh, I'll show it to you. Yeah, you can check that out. You can get a costume that makes Mario look like his 64-bit counterpart.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I gotta get that really one. Cool. I want to get that one.
That's my go-to. Either that or Samurai Mario with the big samurai.
Yeah, I have that one. My go-to is basically the one where he's kind of wearing, like, the mechanic suit and has the Famicom.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like, the back of, like, the call Nintendo and fix this.
Yep, and it, on the back says Famicom.
I didn't even see that. That's fucking awesome. Yep. I need to go do that right now.
Yep, that's my go-to. That's great. I love it, yeah.
It's like small touches like that. The game really pays a lot of homages back to, like you said before, it pays a lot of homages back to its original, to its roots. And it recognizes, I mean, you can dress up as Dr. Mario. Mm-hmm. You can dress up as the Nintendo Repairman, which was literally, they just stuck Mario's head on the back of manuals. That's such a random callback to that.
Love it.
Like,
love it.
That's so, that attention to detail, not a lot of game developers do. I'm not saying only Nintendo, because I think Naughty Dog and other people like that do it, but not a lot of developers give that kind of care and attention that some game, like especially storied franchises and stuff like that, they definitely need. So, overall, fantastic game. Go and play it. I can't recommend it enough.
Absolutely. If you have a Switch, it's a must-own.
All right, so to wrap everything up, now that we've given all of our opinions, hopefully you guys enjoyed the episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It was a pleasure talking with you, Casey.
Thank you for having me on. I love doing this.
And you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @StillLoadingPod on all of those. Feel free to reach out to me. I believe it's @StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. So if you have any... .com if you have any questions or feel like just reaching out to talk or anything like that. Casey, is there any places that, do you have any social media you like to advertise, or do you like your private stuff to stay private, understandably?
I mean, you can follow me on Instagram. I mainly just post a lot of video game related stuff, my collection, a lot of Mario related stuff, so if you're into that, it's Kazuya Kane. I'm a big Tekken fan, so that's where it comes from. That's Kazuya Kane as in November, E.
All right. So Kazuya Kane on Instagram. Give him a follow. So thank you all, thank you everyone for listening. And we'll be back next week with another episode, and I will see you all next time.